injury. It would just put parties on a more equal footing with regards to Santosky v. Kramer, with regards to who has the burden of proof at trial to show what.
Santosky. So Santosky says, if the state's going to deprive a parent of their parental rights, they need to prove their case by clear and convincing evidence. That's the holding. How is that violated here if we take it on its face? The statute requires clear and convincing evidence, and what the legislation and now the statutes say is that if these things are established, then there's a presumption that this burden is satisfied.
Well, what the statutes do is say that after 14 months, it's perfectly fine for parties to be on near equal footing. And what Santosky clearly said was that it is constitutionally intolerable for the parties to be put on equal footing in these cases, given the factors under Matthews v. Eldridge. And these are merely time-based. They're not based on any other fact with regards to what a parent actually did or didn't do during the life of the case, or with regards to what may or may not be in the best interest of the child. So they're not taking into consideration any of those issues. And so with regards to the lower court looked at several out-of-state cases in making this determination. I think it goes to your question, Justice Kadish. Most notably, the Massachusetts case and the Maryland case. Of note, those states had a very similar statutory scheme for terminating parental rights. They had a primary focus on the best interests of the child, and they also had an additional requirement to look at some sort of parental fault. I believe they called it parental fitness in both cases. And in both of those cases, the highest court in those states determined that time-based statutes, like the ones in NRS 128-109, that prove ultimate facts are unconstitutional pursuant to Santosky. They came to somewhat different conclusions. The Massachusetts case said that the statutes themselves, by shifting the burden of proof, was unconstitutional. The Maryland court said that it was, citing to New York Times, Covey Sullivan and Bailey v. Alabama, said that it was impermissible under the Constitution to have a statute, a presumption, prove an ultimate element in the case. And they also used Santosky to justify that. I think those two cases are the most notable with regards to both the Nevada statutory scheme and their schemes in their state and the considerations under NRS 128-109.
Would you address how, if at all, our decision in the DRH case impacts this case?
Yes, Justice Kadish. So in that case, the statutes were attacked on constitutional grounds in DRH. Well, not both of them. It was only NRS 128-109-2.
Right.
But it was a substantive due process claim, not a procedural due process claim. And so this court was not asked to determine whether or not these statutes were in line with procedural due process. And on note, the decision in INRI JDN as well is not binding on this issue, because the question presented in that case was, what is the appropriate burden of proof to rebut these presumptions? The question wasn't asked whether or not these presumptions are constitutional. It was a statutory interpretation question regarding the appropriate burden. And this court did get into a constitutional analysis somewhat under Santosky and discussed the Matthews v. Eldridge factors. But again, it wasn't answering the question that is presented to this court today. And that is the procedural due process of the statutes themselves. Statutes enjoy a presumption of constitutionality. The statutes were given that presumption in INRI JDN, and the court moved to the next question, which was what it was presented with.
But the factual determination that gives rise to the presumption needs to be proven by clear and convincing evidence. So the fact that the child is out of the parents' home for 14 of 20 months, that must be proven by clear and convincing evidence, correct?
It must be. That is correct. But it I mean, that is, but it's not based on any, it's not based on anything that the parent has done, has or hasn't done, or the best interest of the child. All the agency has to do is show that time has passed. And that is exactly.
Doesn't there have to have been something done to cause the child to be out of the home for 14 of 20 months?
There does have to be something, but we don't know whether or not it's the parent's fault. I think we discussed some of the possible delays in those issues, Justice Kadish, and there are a multitude of factors that could be at play. And given the constitutional concerns in these matters, it would be unfair for the parent to have to come in to prove all of that.
I want to solicit your comments on a point that Justice Stiglitz alluded to, which is children are children for a very short time, and 14 months out of your home, for whatever reason, caused that absence. And I get that there may be exceptional cases. But why isn't that appropriate for the legislature to say this child has been out of the home for 14 months? And I don't know how long, you know, that is in an adult's life, but in a child's life, that's huge. So why can't the legislature say that if proven by clear and convincing evidence that's a factor establishing best interests?
So, Justice Pickering, the issues are, I think, most clearly addressed in the Maryland case, in proving by presumption something that terminates parental rights. Okay, even one of the main elements of that case. And again, removing these statutes does not preclude the agency from arguing the passage of time should be considered, and it absolutely should with regards to the best interest of the child. It just it makes it so the parents do not have to rebut these presumptions. It was really difficult to do given the second factor in the Matthews v. Eldridge test. And if I may, just a brief closing, Your Honors. These presumptions state that after 14 months, it's okay to have a near equal burden between the parties, and a near equal burden in these cases is constitutionally intolerable. Given the disparities between the parties and all of the considerations in Santosky v. Kramer and the other out-of-state cases. Real parties in interest request that this court deny the petition and affirm the lower court's ruling holding NRS 128-109-1A and 2 as unconstitutional. Thank you very much for your time and your consideration in this matter.
Okay, colleagues, any additional questions? No? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd first like to address Justice Pickering's question regarding the legislature enacting these statutes regarding time and care. These are the only statutes in the termination of parental rights statutory scheme that really bring forward the public policy that has been widely recognized that children are entitled to safe, stable, and permanent placements. And in NRA JDN, this court specifically said that requiring a parent to rebut the presumptions by a preponderance of the evidence does not equally allocate the risk. The petitioner is required to prove its case by clear and convincing evidence throughout the entirety of the proceeding, whereas the rebuttable presumptions only require a parent to present evidence by a preponderance of the evidence. The disparity in these burdens of proof do not put the petitioner and the parents on equal footing. And also, with respect to the mootness issue, the district court, in inconsistently applying the presumptions as well as inconsistently applying this weighty determination that the statutes are unconstitutional, has created a real systemic issue, not only in Washoe County, but throughout our state, because parents, what jurisdiction that their rights may be subject to one of these proceedings, or don't know what statutes apply because the district court in Washoe County has made this finding in some cases, but other cases not. And this issue really does impact all participants to a child welfare proceeding, including children, parents, and the child welfare agency. This issue has been pending in our jurisdiction since at least June 10th of 2021. As Mr. Sinnott indicated, we have not, as petitioner, has not had the ability to appeal an adverse order to seek relief and to get resolution of this issue of whether or not NRS 128-109-1A and 2 is unconstitutional.
Can I just ask you briefly, counsel pointed us to, and obviously they were referenced in the briefings, the Maryland and Massachusetts cases that have held similar presumptions to be unconstitutional. Are there cases that have considered similar statutes and found them to be constitutional?
Yes, there are. In my briefing, I did cite to a few cases in which the similar presumptions have been upheld. And to distinguish our statutory scheme in Nevada from Maryland and Massachusetts, the Maryland and Massachusetts statutes required granting of the petition, and 109-1A and 2 do not require the district court to grant the petition upon mere application of the statute. And in fact, the real parties in interest and the district court have not cited to a single case, either from our jurisdiction or from an opinion from this court, in which a parent's rights were terminated solely by the petitioner presenting facts about the time and care. That was the sole fact proven, and a parent's rights were terminated. They have not cited to any case like that. And again, it's because our statutory scheme does not allow for that. And for all these reasons, petitioner would request that this court hear the petition on the merits and uphold the constitutionality of the presumptions.
What provision in our statute do you feel deviates from the two cases Justice Cage referred to? You made this argument in response to the Florida case I mentioned as well, but our scheme, notwithstanding the rebuttable presumptions, can ignore them, or maybe ignore is a too strong a word, but must still go further and make further findings. Is it the case-by-case language in the statute that makes this clear? What would you point to that assures the parties that there's still more that the judge must do beyond the presumption?
I would first cite to 128-105, which requires the district court to consider the factors in 107 and 108, and then specifically to 107 and 108, which outlines a multitude of factors that require the district court to consider prior to terminating a parent's rights. And then this court's decision in NRAJDN, which requires the district court to consider the factors in 107 prior to terminating a parent's rights.
Kind of makes me wonder, though, whether the legislative goals setting these time frames and establishing these rebuttable presumptions is a bit illusory.
I believe that the Nevada legislature...
You go through and you establish all these presumptions and these time frames, but there's still more you got to do, which is a little bit unclear what that consists of. You still got to evaluate all the factors in the statute, notwithstanding that. Is that what you're saying?
I think the statutes 109-1A and 2 really put forth the parent's conduct and the timeline, the public policy of those, important public policy of providing the safe, stable, and permanent placements for children. So I think that the Nevada legislature should be given the deference for enacting those statutes.
Chief, sorry, can I just follow up? In the JDN case, we held in finding the burden to rebut the presumption by a preponderance, we said that it would also be the parent's burden to present evidence regarding the 107 factors, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And it goes to an important point of the examples I pointed out in petitioner's appendix of when the parents do not show up. These are mandatory statutory findings in 107. And if the district court does not believe it has sufficient evidence to apply all of the mandatory statutory findings, I believe that the district court still retains discretion to deny the petition to terminate parental rights, even if the presumptions apply.
Okay, any other questions? All right, counsel, thank you for the briefing and the argument today. The matter will stand submitted. The court will stand in recess until the next call of the court. Thank you. All right.